Hello, everybody. You are listening to Limited Playtime, the board game podcast where we bring you board game reviews in 30 minutes or less.
Or the next episode is free.
I am Kyle Bolin.
And I'm Jason Cavallari.
And just like COVID, we're back.
back again.
Yeah, ready to infect you with board game reviews.
More infectious than ever.
Yeah. I hope everybody had happy holidays. Jason, how were your holidays?
They were good.
Cool.
Nothing spectacular. How about
you? they were also good. Although we've been on close contact quarantine twice already in the last 3 weeks. So,
oh my God.
Could have been better, but you know, given the circumstances, fine.
Yes, it's okay.
Yeah. So anyway, we're doing a bit of a reach here, because it's been 4 months since Gen Con. We've done, I think, 3 episodes in a row that were not actual board game reviews, and we're reaching back to one of the games that we played at Gen Con to do a full review of it, which is The Night Cage, a game that we did talk briefly about on one of our Gen Con podcasts, but now we're going to expand on that a little bit. Jason, you might have some stuff to add because you've played the game some since we played it the one time at Gen Con, and you've tried out some of the content that we didn't get to see, so that's what we're talking about today.
Indeed.
Yeah. So if you don't remember, The Night Cage was a game that we talked about being very, like, monochromatic, very black and white visually, where you are one of four survivors trapped in a, or you might be all the survivors, trapped in a cage, a maze, a labyrinth.
Yeah, it's described as like a prison, right? A prison maze kind of thing.
Yeah, it's represented by a board that looks like a grid of like 6x6 squares, right? Like 6 rows, 6 columns, which is important because the gameplay is basically played out by drawing and selecting and laying out tiles on that grid. And that represents the actual like halls of the labyrinth as well as the spaces that you can move into. And if I recall correctly, as you move away from spaces, they then fall away, and the labyrinth is kind of constantly changing shape then, because you could revisit a spot on the board that you've been to, but it will have a different tile when you get there, because you'll have to put a new tile there. And so in that way, it kind of represents the ever-shifting nature of this labyrinth that you're in.
Yeah, it's based on this conceit that, you know, this prison, this maze that you're in is completely dark, except for a single candle that you are holding. And the candle only really illuminates the square that you're in and the spaces that are orthogonally adjacent to it.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you move away with the candle, if there's a space that is now 2 spaces away from where you currently are, then that tile falls into the darkness and is lost forever.
Yeah.
And if you should, again, circle back to that same square, it will have a different tile with a different section of the maze on it.
Most likely, yeah. So now I recall that the point of the game was to try to find 4 keys, one for each of the survivors in the night cage, and then for them to all convene in like an escape tile, right? And then you've got to like use those 4 keys to get out, or I guess it just automatically happens when you're all there. And as you are searching for the keys, which is essentially played through, you know, like the tiles, right? Like you're drawing tiles and trying to get through the stack of tiles to find those keys, lay them down, and then move on to those tiles in order to acquire them. There can be traps and monsters and stuff, correct?
There are different kinds of monsters, yeah, which are, I mean, some of them are trap-like for sure.
I remember, like, one of them was, like, a wall that would, like, just, like, I guess maybe it was a monster, but it would, like, shoot from, like, potentially the entire length of the board to attack you and do damage.
Yeah, so so when you first play the game, there's sort of, like, the basic mode, and then there's an advanced mode, and the basic mode just includes this one type of monster. They're called wax eaters.
Is that the thing that I'm thinking of that, like, slammed us from? Yeah, it reminded me of, like, in Legend of Zelda when you walk in front of one of those weird spiky walls or whatever that, like, just slams you the moment you walk into its line of sight.
Yeah, it's motion sensitive, so that anytime anybody moves into its line of sight, which is an entire row in all 4 directions, it will attack, and it attacks in all 4 directions simultaneously. So if there's somebody standing, like, in a different corridor from you, but still in line of sight of the monster, it will attack them as well as you.
Yeah. So we had to coordinate all these different people. We were each controlling two of the survivors to try to make sure that we were not standing in sort of like danger areas for each person, while also simultaneously trying to stay close enough to each other that we don't get cut off if we should find all four keys, because then you want to be able to swiftly get into the same spot in the escape tile or wherever you need to be. And was it just everybody had to be on the same tile, or was there a specific tile? I can't remember now.
Yeah, once all four keys are found, everybody has to be on the same gate tile.
Yeah.
Now there are several gate tiles in the game.
That's right.
You all have to be on the same one.
Yeah.
To escape.
Yeah. And so I remember we were thinking oh, we've got to get rid of one of these tiles. Like, do we get rid of the gate tile, or do we need to keep those around? And it was one of these things where you've got to keep a certain number of these resources either on the table, or do you have a hand? I can't remember that either.
No. So the game is measured by, basically, the stack of tiles that are the various rooms for the labyrinth. It's supposed to represent basically your candle, and as you take tiles out of it, the candle is melting down farther and farther until eventually it will run out, and you'll just be left in the darkness, and then that's the end of the game. You lose. So you kind of have to measure, the current size of the candle versus what you still have to accomplish and how many moves you might have and things like that. And plus, there are things in the game that when they occur, they cause the candle to go down a little bit faster. So, for example, if you get hit by one of the monster attacks, not only does it sort of knock you out, it also takes a pretty sizable chunk of the candle too. You'd basically just burn tiles.
Mm-hmm.
There are portions in the game where you might want to take a passing turn, where you don't move and you regain this thing called nerve, which allows you, it's basically just a resource that allows you to do an extra thing occasionally. And to get nerve back, you have to basically stay in one spot and pass your turn. But that also still burns a tile even though you're not moving. And you don't know what tiles they are, so you just pull the top one off the stack, and that if that happens to be a key tile or a gate tile and it gets burned, that's just your tough luck.
Okay. Now, when we talked about this at Gen Con, we kind of talked about the theme of it and just sort of the general mood that it evokes and everything. We said that it, did a really good job of that. We really liked the artwork. We really liked the components in the game, which, they're not mind-blowing or anything, but they're moody. They do a really good they do a really good job of evoking that theme that it's going for. And we talked about mechanically, it was a fairly simple game, but also a very satisfying, fun game to play. As far as these sort of cooperative games go, there was just enough, I think, sort of thinking and strategy and, thought put into your actions in order to make it feel like you weren't just randomly doing stuff and kind of dealing with random results and everything.
Yeah.
That, I think that's how I remember feeling about the game. Since then, what have you gotten out of it? You've played it more since then. You've tried out some of the other mechanics. How has that affected your opinion of it?
I had a pretty high opinion of the game when we first played it.
Yeah, we both enjoyed it for sure. Yeah, yeah.
It was a fun time. And since then, I've played it a couple times, and we've added in some of the more advanced monsters and it certainly makes the game more difficult, more of a challenge. And I think that's a good thing, because I think if you continually played it just with the basic game, it would become fairly formulaic. Once somebody figured out how the game works, it would be pretty easy to sort of manage the tile stack, manage the monsters, manage finding the keys and the gates and all that kind of stuff. Consistently enough that I don't think it would be a fun experience. The advanced monsters really throw kind of a wrench into all of that, and it becomes much more challenging. Sometimes a little bit on the sort of random side, which isn't necessarily great, but still, provides for a lot of replayability and changes it up. So for example, one of the monsters that's added is something called a key holder, meaning that in a normal game, there are just these tiles that have keys on them, and when you pass over it, you pick up the key. With the key holder monsters, you actually have to fight the monster because the key is inside of it. Mm-hmm. So you have to kill the monster to get the key, and of course that's dangerous. There are other monsters that cause random pits to show up. on the existing tiles. And if you're standing on a pit, if you're standing on a tile that becomes a pit, eventually you just fall through it. And if there's no place for you to land, you fall eternally. So you're basically out of the game. So there are these pit monsters that show up and create random pits all over the map. As well as a couple of other things that I don't remember as well as those ones, but
yeah.
But they certainly add a layer of depth to it.
Okay. All right. So I mean, like, does that make this game better to you? Like, was it more fun, or does it just add longevity to it?
I had more fun with some of them than other ones.
Yeah.
I thought the keyholder monsters were pretty fun. The pit monsters were not necessarily fun, although I think if you play with certain people, they might be. The pit monsters seemed incredibly hard to me.
Okay. I mean, this feels to me like a game that is... I mean, it's not necessarily like what we call a gateway game, because it doesn't really... I don't feel like it's very well representative of any other types of games that are common in the board game space. But it does feel like a fairly simple game that you could teach and play with, you know, pretty much anybody. I don't think there's very much language in the game, so you wouldn't need, you know, like a high reading level in order to play it very well. You know, like there's not a lot of rules to it. There's not a lot of complexity to the rules that are there. So this feels to me like, you know, like a pretty good close to casual game for, you know, like sort of people that are a little bit more casual with the board games they play or with children or whatever. Mm-hmm. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I would. I think the theme is a little bit too dark for kids.
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. It's sort of,
I could play this with my 6-year-old. I don't it's like you're in a scary dark room. We got to get out. That's all you got to say, right? Oh no, this crazy tooth wall is after you. Watch out, you know. I mean, everybody, you know your kids, right? Like if you've got kids and you know whether or not they can handle a spooky looking game. But I don't feel like there's anything in here that is like so gnarly that, you know, like a 6-year-old, my 6-year-old anyway, wouldn't be able to handle it from what I remember.
I find the art a little unsettling, just aesthetically, but, and I'm, you know, 42.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I guess also my kid's been growing up around Kingdom Death monster stuff in the house and Lord knows what else. So, I guess take that for what it's worth. But, anyway,
I mean, I say that in the most positive way possible. Like, I like unsettling. So
yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's that simple, right? Like that you wouldn't have to worry about, at least mechanically, it being too complex or difficult to teach to somebody. All you have to worry about is whether or not thematically it fits with the people that you want to play this game with. And it's co-op, so that's another thing to consider, is that if you're looking for co-op games that are relatively light but also mechanically and thematically different from your typical pandemics and all the pandemic likes out there, then this fits that bill.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty decent game to play with almost anyone. It's, you know, one of the times that we played it, we had some friends over that we hadn't seen in a while, and one of them is a big gamer, and the other one is sort of humoring when games are brought up. And both of them actually ended up really enjoying it. So, you know, I think if we're to take that as kind of a litmus test for a spectrum of people that have, you know, tangential or much more substantial relationships to board games, it appeals to a broad swath of the population.
It's the new Ticket to Ride, I guess.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, Ticket to Ride is pretty...
I'm joking.
Yeah, I know. Ticket to Ride is pretty cute.
Yeah. All right. So I don't know what else to talk about with the Night Cage. I mean, that's basically it. I mean, it's a co-op. It's relatively simple to play and learn, but challenging to try to win. It's very, very moody and thematic. I guess, you know, like it, you know, one thing that I looked at, I wanted to see how much it was going for, because when you bought the game at Gen Con, you got the collector's edition or whatever, like the Kickstarter version that came with like little pewter minis and acrylic tiles to put out. And the version that is available now to everybody else is not that version. It has cardboard tiles, and rather than having little pewter miniatures for the character figures, it has like colored candles of different shapes and sizes, which still look fine, you know? And so I was wondering, like, you know, so what do you pay for this game, and what would I pay for this game? And when I went to the Board Game Geek website, page for it. The Amazon suggested retail it shows is $78.90, and it shows it going for $69.47 on Amazon. And I said, whoa, that is crazy for what we're talking about here. But I Googled it, and if you go to Smirk and Laughter's website, which they're the publisher, they're selling it for $44.99, and you can get it from other retailers for around that price or slightly less than that.
I was going to say, because that sounds like roughly around the price that I paid for like the deluxe edition.
Yeah. But I don't know what's going on at Amazon, but you know how Amazon is with board games. Sometimes they are putting up they're misrepresenting the price that it should be, and then, like, you know, jacking up the price. It's usually coming from some third-party retailer when that happens. But that is not the price. Buyer beware. Do not go to Amazon to buy this game. It looks like you can get it from Smirk and Laughter's website for $44.99. I saw it show up at Walmart for $39.99 or something like that. And it was in stock previously, it looks like, at the other online retailers for board games that you're familiar with for even less than that, but currently out of stock in those locations. But you can get it for a very reasonable $40-$45 from, you know, their actual publisher website, and, you know, from Walmart, and there may even be some other places to get it online if you're looking for it. I think Barnes and Noble had it at some point, and I've seen it in at least one local board game shop, so check those places out as well if you're interested in this. But definitely don't pay $70 for this. That is overpriced for what you're getting in the retail version, but it is a good game, and I'd say it's worth $40 for sure.
Yeah, yes, certainly. I would say one thing about the components. So, as we mentioned, I have the sort of deluxe edition.
Right, right.
And there's a big plus to the deluxe edition, and there's also kind of a minus where I think the retail version probably has a leg up, which is, so the big plus with the deluxe edition is that the tiles aren't cardboard, they're acrylic plastic. And so, you know, they're much, much sturdier. They look really nice, and that kind of thing. Kyle and I actually spent like an hour trying to peel them because they're
kind of annoying. Actually.
It was kind of annoying. They were covered with this with a thin layer of plastic on each side, and you had to like try and like get a little
wear your fingernails down all the way
so that
you
can peel it off. It was so annoying. But anyway, so that's sort of the advantage. The disadvantage is that the pewter miniatures for the different characters are nice, but they are not colored, so that unless you remember like which specific figure you are, and again, they all look kind of similar.
Yeah, the poses are differentiated, but barely.
Yeah. So without the coloring, you're not going to be able to easily tell which one is yours. The colored wooden pieces in the retail version are probably a better fit for that.
I think so too. Yeah, and I'm looking at the picture, and there are various sizes and shapes, which is great if you're colorblind and you have trouble with color identification. Although, kind of looks like the colors might be fine too. So,
yeah, this is one thing I was disappointed about actually with the deluxe edition was that it didn't actually include the small wooden pieces. It just had
really?
Yeah, it just had the small pewter miniatures. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's surprising, because normally you get the Kickstarter edition, and it comes with everything the retail edition has, as well as all this extra stuff.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, so I was really kind of surprised that it didn't come with those, but I didn't. I make do.
Oh, well. Hey, I know the retail edition still has the pewter keys, so that's nice.
Yeah. Okay. Mine, I also don't know if this is a deluxe thing or if this was just a special at Gen Con, but mine came with like a neoprene board.
That is special. Yeah. They were selling that separately at Gen Con. So, Okay. Yep. You're going to be getting cardboard if you buy this at their current website. And yeah, maybe who knows? Maybe they'll do a reprint someday, but I would just get the retail version anyway. I think that it's probably fine.
For sure.
The artwork is what really makes this game what it is, and, you know, like the simple but satisfying mechanics. So having neoprene, having acrylic, all that, having a little extra pewter, I don't think it's going to add that much. It's not worth worrying about. So,
yeah, I certainly wouldn't. It wouldn't be a deterrent for me.
If this
sounds like something you're interested in.
Nope. Yeah. All right. Cool. Any other thoughts on the Night Cage?
Not really. I mean, I started thinking about, like, okay, if I were to describe this game, how would I describe it? And I was like, well, it's a tiling game. And I started comparing it to other tiling games I know, like Carcassonne and Dungeon Quest. And it's really kind of, It's really kind of like a kind of a mix of both of them.
Is Metro one of those? I feel like I played a game.
Metro is another one. Yeah,
yeah. I think Metro is the one that I think of that is like the most similar because you're like because of the path building or whatever. But
yeah.
Because with Carcassonne, you're not really laying paths. You're laying like scoring areas.
Yeah,
you
it
know?
Depends on what you're going for. But yeah.
I mean, there's roads, but there's so many other things.
It's sort of more like Metro. It's more like Dungeon Quest, where, you know, it's sort of like this unknown maze, and you're trying to get to an unknown location in that maze.
Yeah.
So
it's still very unique compared to those, though.
Yeah, very much so. So the point that I'm sort of belaboring, trying to make is that it's sort of unlike any other kind of tile laying game that I've ever played.
Yeah, especially with the way that the tiles disappear behind you. Like that's, I think that's kind of the key thing that makes the difference between it and all the other tile laying games, especially tile laying games with like paths that you're building. That's the key difference here, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it adds a nice layer of kind of suspense, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It felt suspenseful is a good way of describing it, actually. Good word.
Yay.
I'll just go with that.
Vocabulary.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. All right. So that was the Night Cage. I don't think we did the designer, artist, and publisher. I'm going to tack it on here. It's designed by Christopher Ryan Chan, Chris McMahon, and Roswell Saunders. Art by Christopher Ryan Chan and published by Smirk and Laughter Games. Jason, what is the difference between Smirk and Laughter and Smirk and Dagger?
You know, I was thinking that same thing as soon as you mentioned the publisher, because I meant to look it up before we did
this. I think they're the same publisher. I just think they have, like, different imprints.
Yeah.
And this, you would think that this particular theme would maybe fall under the Dagger more so than the Laughter.
You would think. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It looks like they are just different imprints of the same company.
They are. Yeah. I was like 99% sure of that. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. I would certainly put this under Smirk and Dagger. I don't know. Why.
More so than Smirk and Laughter. Yeah. Oh, the monster's got us again, and we've been consumed for all eternity.
I know. How delightful.
Yes.
Oh, man. Yeah, I have no idea.
Okay. All right. Whatever makes their business, keep moving, I guess. So that's it. That's the Night Cage. We will be back in 2 weeks. If you would like to get a hold of us between now and then and tell us why the Night Cage is the most hilarious game ever made, how would they do so, Jason?
All right. Well, to tell your I'm scared in the dark jokes, you can you can email us. It's podcast@limitedplaytime.com. You can go to the website, limitedplaytime.com. You can go to Twitter, which is @limitedplaytime, or Instagram, @limitedplaytimepodcast.
We're a little rusty here, aren't we?
I know. I had to think about it for a quick minute.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So we're gonna be back in 2 weeks, probably with another board game review. I don't think we've hit 125 just yet, and I don't even know if that's going to be a special episode anyway. But Jason and I will have to play something between now and then because we've got a list of games that we've played once and we know we need to play them more than that. So we're going to do that. Right. We promise. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with another board game review. And then who knows after that?
Indeed. We don't know anything anymore.
Yeah, it's everything is dark from 2 weeks out. So who knows?
Yeah.
No promises that we're even around. Omicron will have consumed us and we'll be falling in the pit of Omicron forever.
Quite probably.
Yes. Yes. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Later.
Bye.